This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
BFM 89.9. Good morning. You are listening to The Morning Run. It's 6 in the morning on Monday, the 24th of January, the start of another wonderful week, hopefully. I'm Shazana Mokhtar in studio today with Kusu Chuang and Tan Chen Lee.
Good morning.
Hooray. Hooray, hooray, hooray.
Such enthusiasm on a Monday morning. I love it.
Because you didn't call me Wong Shaoding.
Oh, it's true. It's true. I do tend to mix the two of you up. Not because you're so pretty, Chuang. You're so pretty.
Absolutely. I do look good in a little black dress. Not. Unlike Shaoding.
In any case, today is the International Day of Education. So the theme this year is Changing Course, Transforming Education. And in conjunction with that, we do have a Breakfast Grill panel discussion discussing what it would take to make vocational education a more attractive career pathway. I'll be joined by Daniel Bernbeck of the German-Malaysia Chamber of Commerce, as well as Andrew Pereira of General Assembly Malaysia. We're going to be discussing why TVET, or Technical and Vocational Education and Training, isn't a more popular option for our students. We'll also be covering news from over the weekend. Later on at 8:30, we're going to talk about the snap polls that have been called in Johor. I think this came out over the weekend. The Johor Sultan has dissolved the state assembly, so we're going to see polls yet again.
At 8:30, we'll talk about... at 7:45, before that, we'll talk about Lee Zijia's exit from the Badminton Association of Malaysia and what that bodes for Malaysian sports. And all this and more today.
Definitely, we'll also be keeping an eye on Tun Dr. Mahathir's condition in IJN. Definitely.
That's right.
He is 96, in cricket circles, that's considered a very, very good innings. And we hope that innings will continue.
So lots of things that happened over the weekend. We'll cover those stories throughout the morning. All this and more today, Monday, the 24th of January. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. That was Peter Gabriel with In Your Eyes. You are listening to The Morning Run with Shazana Mokhtar, Kusu Chuang, and Tan Chen Lee. I would like to have it on record that I've identified everyone correctly this morning.
Thank you.
We are talking about names, though, and I want to ask you guys, how do you react when someone mispronounces your name?
Well, having gone to school abroad and worked abroad, I have come across it many, many times in the Western developed world, in the UK and in Australia. And to me, it's a failing, okay? Because when you take the effort to learn someone's name and you pronounce it correctly, your esteem in that person's eyes rises in my regard, right? And an example of that was when Tan Sri Abdul Wahid Omar came to the grill a few years ago. This is a long time ago, right? And he had made it a point with his people. This one is in Maybank, right? He made it a point to remember the name of Mila. So, then you think to yourself, wow, this mover and shaker remembers your name. It's a big deal. And therefore, his esteem rose in my eyes by another two or three notches.
That's exactly the point. The article that we saw today, according to research, many people don't actually realize it, that habitually pronouncing a name or unfamiliar name incorrectly is a form of implicit discrimination.
That's right. Well, not even discrimination. It's just like, that person's esteem falls a few notches in your regard because he's a bit of an idiot or she's a bit of an idiot.
Exactly. Right? And it's also send the message to people that you're not very important. Yeah. I don't have to make the effort to make your name right.
I agree that it is. It's a sign of disrespect in a way that you don't try at least to get a person's name right. Because I understand that in some cases there are unfamiliar names, right? We meet people from different cultures, from different countries, and sometimes their names are names that we haven't experienced or seen before. So I can understand where there's difficulty in pronunciation there. But when it's done purposefully or sort of like carelessly and with no regard to it, saying, "Oh, I can't pronounce your name anyway, so why should I try?" That is quite disrespectful, I feel.
Absolutely. And especially when I'm not trying to be generalizing here, but especially Western people from Western countries come to Asia, right? And they want to live here, they want to work here, they want to exist among locals, but they don't spend time among the locals because they exist in that expat bubble. And then they don't bother to even remember or even pronounce your Asian, Malay or Indian or Chinese name properly. Well, then you get the sense that, you should go back to where you came from because, especially in Singapore right now, there's a very strong anti-expat sentiment going on. And, there's a reaction lie, But if you bent over backwards and you remembered people's names, they would embrace you because you're being part of
effort.
The culture.
Yeah, correct. And I mean, what do you do? Because I think all of us in the studio so far don't really have an anglicized name. So do you
I refuse to have one. Oh, I refused to give myself a Matsale name. I said, this is the name my father gave me. You can try all you want. If you fail, well, then you're a, you know, ex-idiot.
Yeah, so a lot of people actually try to have an anglicized name or a nickname at work or even socially so that they can fit in more easily, so that people can remember them.
But I think, I mean, having an anglicized name, it's not just a function of... I mean, I'm thinking of Thai names, right? Thai names,
absolutely.
Everyone has a nickname because their names are so long and they readily understand that people aren't going to be able to pronounce their names. So they always have a shorter, snappier nickname, and that's perfectly accepted to them. So I kind of get it in that context. And in terms of having an anglicized name on my part, I always have one when I'm at Starbucks because it's just easier to say Anna than it is to give my full name sometimes.
Shaz is easy, what?
Yeah, perhaps. I don't give Shaz, though.
Well, you see, the thing is, when you give a Masala guy a single syllable, then they can fathom it because that's how their mind operates. But when you go beyond two or three syllables, then they get a bit crumpled up in the brain.
It's sort of like, this only happens when I'm abroad, by the way. Locally, it's fine. But abroad, it's like you see a name and they go like, what? What name is that? When they can't brain it and the queue's really long and you just want to give them something simple so that they can remember and get your order done.
It doesn't work for me in Starbucks here. They still call me, sometimes I'm called Charlene, sometimes I'm called Shirley. Sometimes they call me, I don't know, all sorts of name. And I even have people calling me nicknames from
so
Street
fellow
Fighter.
Asians are calling you these things. They're getting it wrong.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, Starbucks, I don't think they really care about getting your names right.
Well, they should. They're in the service industry. They should. Just like how this is the Asian century. The 21st century is the time of Asia. If you want to come here, if you want to do business with Asia, well, jolly well get on with the program. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think we'll give that last word to you, Chuang. And meantime, tell us what you think. How do you react when people mispronounce your name? You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're taking a quick break. And when we come back, we discuss the question of what do you do with your old electronics equipment? Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. That was Toro y Moi with Still Sound. We are still sound. We're still lucid here on the morning run. I'm Shazana with Kusu Chuang and Tan Chen Li.
Barely corpus mentis. Barely.
I have no idea what word you just said.
Well, same, yeah. Just the brain is still sparking, just.
Okay, just. We're just waking up with the sun, you know, helping you get your morning started on today, Monday, the 24th of January.
No sun yet.
No sun yet. Soon, though, we're watching it. Anyways, moving on to our next story of the morning. Now, one of my favorite purchases of 2021 is a pair of Apple AirPods that I bought on discount. So I really love my AirPods. I think they changed my life. But a recent article in the Financial Times has made me rethink whether I should get a second pair when these ones die on me. Financial Times writer Alexandra Heal wrote about the trials and tribulations of trying to get her wireless earbuds repaired. And she unearthed a myriad of challenges on how electronic waste is handled.
Yes, so I'm sure all of us own a pair of AirPods or Samsung Galaxy Buds or the brands.
You don't? No.
Okay, you're living in a different era. And probably this pair that you have right now is maybe a successor of another pair. And the old pair is already probably sitting deep in the closet somewhere or somewhere in wasteland. And it's estimated by 2026, nearly all 750 million earbuds in the market will be defunct. And there's a leftover mass of plastic, copper, circuit boards, magnets, batteries that will join our planet's trove of e-waste that stretch around the circumference of Earth. Even recycling can't keep up with that. It's massive. And some people actually try to fix their earbuds, but it's really difficult.
Yeah, earbuds are not the problem because they're small, yeah?
Yes.
So, I mean, what we should really be concerned about is all this stuff that we're buying that we don't really need to impress people that we don't even really like. And that's been the problem for the last 30 years, which is why we are having this huge environmental degradation and climate change on a cataclysmic scale.
Yeah.
That is the real problem. So in order to save the world, we should just buy less stuff.
That's true. That's very true also. But then the thing is, earbuds, a lot of people bought it, but they can't fix and you have to throw them.
Yeah.
And then there's a lot of, it's the volume game because there's too many of it and that's creating a lot of waste.
Yeah, absolutely. That's it's planned obsolescence, isn't it? Right?
Correct.
Not
yes.
like stuff that, you know, were made, I don't know, 50 years ago and then they lasted ages, right? I mean, my neighbor still drives a Volvo 240 GLE. You know those tanks? Mm. Because they're well built, but Volvo cottoned on to the fact that if you use it for the next 50 years, well, they won't buy any more new cars. So now cars won't last more than 10 years. Where do cars go? They don't go to the great car park in the sky. They go somewhere on Earth. And that's going to kill the earth even more.
Yes, that's really true. And so apparently it's common practice for manufacturers don't make replacement parts, especially for things like even your phones or your MacBook and stuff like that. And no manuals are available to tell you how to fix them.
You're supposed to bin it, lah, then buy another one.
Exactly.
That's the whole idea.
But there's a lot of e-waste, right? So that's why there's a campaign that's called Right to Repair that eventually led to Apple selling parts of its latest models of iPhone and Mac computers, and even Microsoft recently committed to improving the design of the product to make it more repairable. So actually, the manufacturer have a lot of parts to say to do in this, actually.
When you think about it, the electronics industry is fairly young in the sense that we've only seen the advent of these gadgets in the past, 40?
Yeah.
You know, maybe in the past 10 years, it's gotten a lot more accessible, so people are buying it a lot more. So it's still fairly young, and I can see how it's still developing the rules that's needed in order to make this a more sustainable industry overall. So I was really interested to read about this right to repair. I don't think I've ever heard of it before because I'm not a very techie person, right? I'm the type who would just buy more stuff, as Chuang disapprovingly looks at me and, you know, shakes his head. But I like that idea, the fact that companies, manufacturers, should be under a right to repair obligation and provide manuals and also spare parts to let people extend the life of their electronics rather than have it just go to waste or, you know, yeah.
Exactly. So, Chuang, are you the type? I guess you're not, but are you the type?
Hey, hang on. How'd you know? Can't you tell?
Who knows, right? Yeah. So, are you the type who would upgrade your electronic devices for better technology?
Yeah, actually, I'm quite guilty of that, lah. But yeah. I do try and make them last as long as possible.
Yes.
And, but this whole right to repair thing, I think it's trying to plug a leak in the dam with just a finger, with a finger. It's just more stuff, right? And at the end of the day, this is runaway capitalism.
I don't think it has to be one or the other, Chuang. I agree that we can buy less stuff, but we can also repair the stuff we have. And I feel like all these different options can work in tandem. It doesn't have to be just buy less stuff. You could also argue for some people to buy less stuff and others to repair what they have, or to do both, you know? So, I wouldn't put it in binary ways like that.
Because technology advancement is so fast, sometimes, you know, the phone that you have right now is the latest technology now, but maybe like 6 months down the road or something is no longer the latest.
That is true.
So do you want to upgrade, or do you want to, you know, just stick with it, or, you know, something goes wrong?
I mean,
do you want to buy replacement parts? Yeah.
That is something that we're going to grapple with, right? Like, what if your smartphone doesn't have the holographic features that the future phones will have? If your phone doesn't have 5G, for example, what do you do with that? You can't upgrade it. You can't repair it to get 5G, right? So you're going to have to buy a new phone if you want to take part in that kind of new technology. So these are questions we're going to be grappling with for many more years to come, essentially. All right, it's 6:24 in the morning. We're heading into the 6:30 a.m. news bulletin. You can tell us what you think about electronics and what you do with old electronics. WhatsApp us at 01-8789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. When we come back after the news bulletin, we'll be taking a look at what's making headlines around the world. Taking you to the news is Ragged Wood by Fleet Foxes, BFM 89.9. That was Duran Duran with Ordinary World. Well, we may be in an ordinary world, but it is extraordinary times. You're listening to The Morning Run with Shazana Chuang and Chen Li. So this time of the morning, we normally scan the horizon to see what's making headlines around the world. Who would like to start this morning?
I can go. So I was looking at this article on BBC, I think. Oh, sorry, this is Bloomberg. Wrong news portal. So China's been making fake snow for the Beijing Olympics that's coming soon on February 4th. And this came about because in Zhangjiakou, it has really dry weather and high water stress. And apparently the local water resource per capita is less than one-fifth of China's national average. And they need about 2 million cubic meters of water to fill up pretty much almost like 800 of the Olympic-sized swimming pools to create enough fake snow to cover the ski runs and access roads during the Games.
Wow.
And apparently, it is all because of the climate issues and all that, they will be the first ever Winter Olympics to be 100% based on fake snow.
Interesting.
Yes. And then in the past, in Sochi, it was 80%, and in Pyongyang, it was 90% based on fake snow. So this has been a recurring issue already for a lot of Winter Olympics and all that. So it's pretty difficult, I guess, in terms of the global warming issue.
Yeah, it's still a few days away. In fact, it's only a few days away. And what is also interesting is that China, unlike the last time they held the Olympics in 2008, they are not, well, they're basically doing things their own way, very much so. So they have basically said, we're going to stand firm about zero COVID. We're still going to ban broadcasters from talking about Xinjiang or, you know, the way they're treating Hong Kong. And, you know, they're basically standing firm. So, you know, basically it's like take it or leave it kind of thing, which is very interesting. So in just 13 years, they've gone from bending to global pressure on everything to staying to global pressure. Well, sorry, not this time.
I mean, the Beijing Olympics have become quite contentious because there have been several countries that, although they're sending athletes, they've decided to take a diplomatic, they decide to protest diplomatically against the Olympics, in which they won't send any high-ranking government officials there. So it is creating, it's an unusual sports event to take place because of these tensions in a way. So I think it will be, it's something to watch to see how that plays out in the next 2 weeks. And meanwhile, as you mentioned, Chuang, China is cracking down on COVID-19 and just doing this massive lockdown to ensure that the spread of cases is kept under wraps before the Olympics kick off next week.
Yes, and I want to make a correction. It wasn't Pyongyang, it's Pyeongchang.
Yang, not Chang.
Yeah. So if, speaking about mispronunciation.
The Yang gang. Well, we also want to talk about, well, over the course of the week, of course, it's the financial markets. And there's been huge tumult in financial markets because of the Fed. I mean, now, I think, was it Morgan Stanley or JP Morgan saying there could be as many as 4 rate hikes?
Because Goldman Sachs.
Goldman Sachs, that's right. So the thing is, you know, I want to talk about, so Ethereum is 2,400, Bitcoin is 35,000. They've both fallen off the cliff in the last few days. But this week could be even more because Tesla reports earnings, Apple reports earnings, and of course the Fed also talks about how they might discuss their interest rate hike timeline because they meet on Wednesday. So be braced for more volatility, I guess.
More tumult in the markets.
Tumult,
that's something to watch out for over the weekend. We have time for maybe one more headline or two more headlines. What else has caught your eye?
Well, I was looking at the Australian Open over the weekend that there's two supporters or spectators who was wearing a T-shirt that says, "Where is Peng Shuai?"
China again.
Again, yes, yes. And as you know, spectators are not allowed to display any political or commercial statements during the tournament, and so they were being ejected. And
yeah,
yes.
I've stopped watching the Australian Open for three reasons. First, no Federer. Second, no Djokovic. And third, Raducanu is out. So
so all the people you'd place bets on have left the...
No bets. I don't gamble. Well, sometimes, but very rarely. But no Emma Raducanu. She's out, unfortunately.
But Rafael Nadal is still in the running, Chuang.
Yeah, I never liked him. Plus,
no.
his hair is dropping. So It's true. It's happening. He's
that doesn't
bald.
Have anything to do with his sporting ability, for sure.
I didn't know you're watching for the aesthetic part of, you know...
Yeah, well, unfortunately, that's why I watch Raducanu.
All right. Well, it is 6:45 in the morning. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll be flipping through the local papers and checking out the news portals to see what's making headlines here in Malaysia. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. That was Stevie Wonder, Living for the City. You're listening to The Morning Run with Shazana Chen Li and Kusu Chuang. It's that time of the morning where we look through our local newspapers and portals. Tell me what's caught your attention.
Well, MM2H has they also have a lot of progress. We have already approved 15 new applicants out of 111 as of November that we have. So our home minister said that this will add about or contribute about 1 billion to the country. That's because of the new requirement or new conditions that is imposed. Basically, you have to have a permanent saving of at least 1 million and a declaration of liquid asset of at least 1.5 million versus previously it was only 300,000 and 500,000. And you need to have offshore income of at least 40,000 a month last time it was 10,000 per month.
Wow, 15. Whoa, congratulations, Malaysia.
Yep, so we are expecting, I mean, in the past, MM2H has contributed 38 billion to the economy between 2002 and 2019.
All right. So we know that MM2H caused a big splash last year because the government changed the rules kind of out of the blue, it seemed, and it caused a lot of people to be put in limbo. I don't know how this MM2H is going to proceed moving forward. We've received some applications, but as Chuang alluded to, those applications are quite, it's a trickle, really. Whereas yeah. what we need is a flood if we really want to generate the economy with foreign residents in Malaysia. But okay, something to we'll be keeping in mind for the next year, for sure. I think if we look at the front pages of the newspapers, most of them, if not all of them, are mentioning Johor state elections. The Johor Sultan has dissolved the state assembly over the weekend. So we are geared for yet another poll that's happening sometime in the next month or so.
Of course. And I want to talk about Tun Dr. Mahathir, right? Of course, he was admitted to IGN with some concern among all Malaysians. And of course, Marina Mahathir, his daughter, I think the latest story on the Star Online still says that Dr. M is still undergoing treatment. Apparently, he's also been seeing family members over the weekend. So clearly, right, because he's much loved and revered in the country. And, you know, he, of course, just like some radio people, not mentioning any names, he does polarize some people as well.
He's a very polarizing figure. Everyone's keeping watch on what happens with him. And we do wish him a speedy recovery.
Yes, and Marina actually urged the public not to spread fake news about Tun M's health. So everybody, please be...
Yep, let's be mindful. Let's be responsible about the information we spread. Okay, Chuang, what else do you have in
front
of you?
The Badminton Association of Malaysia now may reconsider Zijia's ban. Recall that he had left BAM under, you know, whatever circumstances. And I think the funding was also reduced at some point because of the economy. So he left the Badminton Association of Malaysia. Then BAM imposed a 2-year ban on international tournament participation, which then incurred a whole string of wrath from the netizens of Malaysia.
Yes.
And now Ahmad Faizal, one of the top officials within BAM, says they may now reconsider lifting the suspension. So...
Ahmad Faizal, is he the Minister of Youth and Sports?
Yes, one of the top officials within the government.
That's
yeah.
right.
Sorry,
okay.
yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah.
All right. So, I mean, this has caused a lot of reaction from netizens, from the public, really, because badminton is pretty much a national sport, right? And the fact that our top player has decided to step back and is now being prevented from representing the country, there are just a lot of questions about what's happening. How did we get to this place? And we are going to be speaking to Harish Joel, a sports journalist with 2213.my, to get his thoughts on what's happening. And really just what I'd like to clarify is what happens when an athlete leaves the National Association and whether they're able to represent the country moving forward.
Yeah, I think different sports has different requirements. For badminton, if you don't have the BAM to back you, you can't participate in any tournaments at all.
But also, I mean, Lee Chong Wei was richly rewarded for his exploits back in the day. So are we being unfair on BAM in this regard? I mean, we should also look at the flip side of the coin, right?
We don't have the full story right now. Lee Zijia has not given any statement, so we don't have an explanation from his part. We're hearing from BAM, but I think it's a situation that requires a lot of soul searching in anyhow, whether we and how we want to progress the national sporting movement. Anyways, looking at other headlines, I saw something over the weekend that I thought was quite curious, which is that teachers will now be allowed to take part in politics. And QPACS, the Civil Service Association, has issued a statement saying that they hope this doesn't mean that teachers will be used as political tools. I'm not sure how comfortable
in Malaysia,
I am.
Yeah, we need more politicians like we need in the hole of their head, right?
Too comfortable with the idea of teachers getting involved in politics. And this involves education ministry teachers as well as community development department teachers. So I'm curious about this. I'd like to see more details on what this actually means and what political involvement means as well. Something to keep an eye on.
Is this because of the Undi 18 and they're like, let's start them young?
There was arguments made that if people can start voting at 18, then perhaps teachers should also be able to get involved in politics. I don't know. I need some clarity on what this policy decision means moving forward.
Very distressing. The education sector is a world of pain right now. What we need are teachers to teach with quality, not with teachers with political aspirations where, you know, all those troubles lay down the line. Right.
Well, we have time for maybe one more quick headline. Does anybody want to take that?
Yeah, front page of the Malaysian Reserve, on the cusp as we are of Chinese New Year, there's a report from Picori.com saying that Malaysians should brace for a 15% price hike in basic goods according to this study, which says that basic food is one of the things that are prone to inflation, and this is quite worrying because you know we're still trying to recover from the pandemic and. High prices are going to be anathema to recovery.
And the price of chicken as well, right? Yeah, which is being mentioned right. There in the article again. So it seems like the chicken prices has not been resolved, isn't it, like, since last year till now.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.